So this is without a net, where we have all sorts of prompts in a jar, and then I reach into the jar, and I've not seen the prompts, and then I respond to them immediately. So here. Oh. We still haven't done resistance. I'm saying this a couple months into, or I picked this up a couple months into the protests / riots / looting, depending on your perspective, of the summer of 2020. And I think this is true. And I guess what I really want to talk about is when I've seen bazillions of videos of people walking, people chanting, people shining lights into people's windows, people pulling out guns, people throwing explosives, people setting fires, people looting, people chanting, and I want to talk about Rourke's drift in the Zulu Wars. The British invaders had not many people, 100, 200 people there, not many. And the Zulu had thousands. And one of the reasons that the Zulu lost, well, one of them was technology because the British were better armed. Another was they had different notions of warfare. And the British had organized, disciplined soldiers who worked cohesively in a military-style organization. And the Zulu, their notion of warfare was more individualistic and based on personal bravery, where individuals would rush up with spears. They had guns, but they didn't really like to use them because you could kill somebody at a distance, and that didn't seem very brave. And as a consequence, the British won, although they were outnumbered. And also, there wasn't a central command and control system where you coordinate your efforts. Now let's talk about the Turkish military for a couple 300 years, where they had a policy of attacking in piecemeal, as it's called. Their official policy was to have all units act independently, and they would be wiped out routinely for 300 years by the Russians, by Slavs, other Slavs, because a coordinated effort is more effective. We're going to do another battle too, which is the Battle of Antietam / Sharpsburg in the American Civil War, where the federal general, McClellan, he was able to find Lee's order of battle. They were wrapped in cigars. The order of battle was wrapped in some cigars. Some soldier found the cigars, went to smoke them, and found the order of battle. So McClellan had Lee right where he wanted him. And instead of attacking all at once, he would attack here, and then he would attack over here, and then he would attack over here, then he would attack over here, allowing Lee to move his reserves back and forth. And my point is that my friend Vince Emanuele was in the Marine Corps, and he said that they didn't even touch a weapon with a gun in it, or a weapon with a bullet in it, a live weapon, until I believe either the 8th or 13th week of training. And this is intensive 24-hour day training. And there's a famous line, I don't remember the person's name right now, but he's a Western historian who argued that the West won the world not by the brilliance of its ideas, but through the application of organized violence. And in my book Endgame, I emphasize the word violence, that Western civilization has conquered the planet through violence. But there's another part of this too, which is organized. And when I look at hundreds of people flooding a street in Chicago, and what they do is break into stores and take clothes, jewels, whatever it is they take, I ask how much that actually hurts capitalism. Yeah, that hurts individual store owners, hurts the insurance companies, but that's not how you win a war. The way you win a war is by destroying the enemy's capacity to wage the war. That's how the Allies won World War II. That's how the Union won the Civil War. That's why the Japanese had virtually no chance to win their part of World War II once the United States got involved, because there was no way they were going to affect the U.S. capacity to wage war. And part of the difficulty is that we have a problem on the left. And, you know, when I wrote Endgame, I was not critical of the Black Bloc. And I made a mistake there, because I was critical of the mainstream, quote, resistance, the mainstream protests. And the problem is that at the time, I hadn't yet thought it through enough to see both of them as in many ways, two sides of the same coin. And the protests were mainly about, in many ways, feeling good because you're speaking truth to power, even though you recognize we live in a democracy theme park where we can certainly talk, but nobody listens, and we can vote, but doesn't matter. The levers we pull as corporate anthropologist, I believe it was Jane Addams, Sarah Jane Addams. I don't remember her name, but she said this great bit about we live in a democracy theme park where we can speak into microphones, but they're not connected to anything and nobody's listening, and we can pull levers on ballots, but it doesn't matter because they're not connected to anything. And it's a theme park, and she's brilliant. That's right. And so a lot of the protests are merely speaking truth to power, making yourself feel good about having done your part, but it doesn't change anything. And what I didn't recognize at the time, but I have since become very clear on, is that the Black Bloc / Antifa style resistance, quote unquote, is the other side of the same coin, because it's really about flipping off power. And it's about the same. It's about making yourself feel good, but it doesn't affect tangible change. It doesn't bring down capitalism. It doesn't affect industrial civilization's capacity to wage war on the planet. And both of them are really about emotional states. I haven't seen any of this so-called resistance going after critical infrastructure. I haven't seen them doing anything that a real military would do. And for me, resistance is about significantly affecting the levers of power. It's leveraging your actions to tangibly halt your enemy's capacity to wage war.